The following Dharma talk was given by Jodi Hojen Kimmel at Zen Mountain Monastery. Hojen Sensei is head priest at the monastery and the abbot of the Zen Center in New York City. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
In Silence by Thomas Merton. Be still. Listen to the stones of the wall. Be silent. They try to speak to your name. Listen to the living walls. Who are you? Who are you? Whose silence are you? Who, be quiet, are you? As these stones are quiet. Do not think of what you are, still less of what you may one day be. Rather, be what you are. But who? Be the unthinkable one you do not know. Oh, be still while you are still alive, and all things live around you, speaking, I do not hear, to your own being, speaking by the unknown that is in you and in themselves. I will try, like them, to be my own silence. And this is difficult. The whole world is secretly on fire. The stones burn, even the stones, they burn me. How can a person be still or listening to all things burning? How can they dare to sit with them when all their silence is on fire? Be silent, then try to speak your name. Who are you? Who are you? Whose silence are you? Everything at its core made from this sound of silence. So we begin each session with session precautions that we heard, guides to help us work with our body, our speech, and our mind in a way that encourages our meditation, compassion, and deep inquiry. This is what was read to us. They also support the harmony and strong practice of the Sangha. And the first of these session precautions is to maintain inner and outer silence. This is the foundation of session practice, allowing us to see our minds more clearly and to let others do the same. Let go of all non-essential communication. Why are we drawn to a retreat where silence is practice? Why are you drawn to a retreat where silence is practiced? So today I would like to, what I've been exploring is this inquiry into silence and stillness. Some of the silence is common to us, and what Buddha called noble silence, muna, which is translated as measurement, M-O-U-N-A, measurement. He says more specifically, the measurement of words, which when practiced leads to more meaningful and powerful speech. And it also includes silence of the body and speech and mind. It has been described as something or someone who, united in their whole being, body, mouth, and thought, and when there's whole body and mind understanding of this, we understand who we are. And in the process, we allow others to be who they are. This poem made me think of Annie Dillard, who wrote, "The stones talk, but it takes them 10,000 years to say one word." The stones talk, but it takes them 10,000 years to say one word. Listen to the stones of the wall, be silent. They try to speak your name. Listen to the wall, living walls, who are you? And we may think that noble silence is the absence of speaking. I did. But sometimes it is talking. And there's sometimes when remaining silent is not noble. Silence may not be silent. So it pays to slow down and be quiet and investigate. Maintain inner and outer silence. Generally, I think silence is thought to be an observable form from the outside of a person, external. But in the Pali Canon, noble is an internal state, which is synonymous with jhana, withdrawing the mind from sense impressions in our meditation. So in the Pali Canon from Buddha, he says, "But what is noble silence? Then the thought occurred to me, there is the case where a monk, with the stilling of directed thoughts and evaluations, enters and remains in the second jhana, rapture and pleasure born of concentration. Unification of awareness free from directed thought and evaluation. Internal assurance." Now that's a bit there. It could be, bring your mind to noble silence. Unify your mind in noble silence. Concentrate your mind in noble silence. Enter into rapture and pleasure born of silence, derived of concentration and awareness that is free from thought and fabrication. And of course, in our tradition, there's many koans around speech and silence. I found a few that I... There's one, a monk Das Fuketsu. "Without speaking, without silence, how can you express the truth?" Fuketsu observed, "I always remember springtime in southern China. The birds sing among innumerable kinds of fragrant flowers." There's four monks decided to meditate silently without speaking for 2 weeks. By nightfall on the first day, the candle began to flicker and then went out. The first monk said, "Oh no, the candle is out." The second monk said, aren't we not supposed to talk? And the third monk said, "Why must you break the silence?" And then the fourth monk laughed and said, "Ha, I'm the only one who didn't speak." The first night. Sound familiar? Dogen said in the Mountains and River Sutra, in the Sounds of the Valley Streams, "The voices of the river valley are the long, broad tongue of the Buddha. The form of the mountain is nothing other than this pure body." When Buddha was asked the 14 unanswerable questions, he used noble silence, opting to discuss another topic. years before coming to the monastery, I was maintaining a painting studio, and mostly painting. I was led into this question of a still life. What is a still life? And so I would just study, as you see in the common room, lots of bowls and bottles, just setting up a still life. And then I decided I wanted my body more involved. So I saw this ad for a mime school. And I always loved mime. I used to imitate Charlie Chaplin when I was little. I'd get in my pajamas and swing an umbrella and make like I had a mustache. I found this little ad for Le Centre du Silence Mime School. Some of you may have heard this. And I thought, I got to go to this. I don't know what it is. It's out in Colorado. I was on the East Coast. And, I really wanted to learn how to convey reality, the details of reality, using the body, right? Like, you know, the specifics of what you're holding. You know, is it a delicate glass or is it a mug of beer, right? So I went, and the first instruction was, and there was another woman there that I met, the first instruction was to meet at a pink mailbox, and this vehicle was going to come and bring us to where we needed to go. So it was a really super hot day, it's high altitude there too, so it was very dry. And so we went to the pink mailbox. I was with this other woman, and she was, if I can use a nice Jewish term to describe her, kvetching about everything. The heat, why do we have to go to a pink mailbox, just everything. I thought it was so much fun, you know, what he created. And she was just like, I don't understand what we're doing here. Why don't we just get a normal car? Because this vehicle comes and it's kind of like a covered wagon on a flatbed with some seats set up that we're supposed to. So we get on and she's like, what the heck is this? You know, and I kind of loved her. Like she was complaining so much that she was so endearing. You know, those kind of people that just kvetch, kvetch. There's something really sweet about her. And so we go up this mountain path through the woods. And we get to this boulder, and around the boulder, we're like in this urban neighborhood. I was just like, it's like a twilight zone. And she's still going on and on, like, where are we going? How, you know, so we get off, and I remember the street was, there was this heightened sound, right? It was very like, you could hear everything, like there was somebody bouncing a basketball, and I could hear like every bounce. And a guy was working on his car, and he was banging the muffler with a hammer, and it just sounded so clear. And Oliver North Watergate trials, and Oliver North was talking on a radio, and we're going down the street, and she's like, where are we? What are we doing? And then there's a group of people, and I saw somebody in striped leotards and a vest. I thought, that's got to be the place. Who else wears that, you know, up there? So we went over, and everybody was there. It was the right place, and it's just a house, right? It's a house. So she starts saying out loud, this is a house. This is a house. Where's le centre du silence? Where's the centre du silence? And the teacher came over to her, and he looked at her, and he said, Mademoiselle, where is le centre du silence? And she, goop. And that was... That, like, she was, like, really into it the whole, after that, never, her kvetching was appropriate after that. I feel like we're offered the same demand from Merton. Who are you? Whose silence are you? Do not think what you are. Be the unthinkable one. You do not know. And I was looking at some other perspectives of silence. And one was, and what other disciplines have to say, in the words of John in the Bible, he said, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word became flesh. And then, I hope I get this right, but there's this Sanskrit text, which is the core of Hinduism, and it says that Om is the imperishable Word. Om is the universe. When you say Om, you're just vibrating the entire universe as yourself. And then this Trika school of Tantra has it at its core a system of linguistic mysticism, and it says, to explain the nature of reality and how the impulse of consciousness travels along a spectrum of sound, vibration, all the way to physical embodiment and reality, that quantum and postmodern science agree matter is vibration, that mind consciousness affects matter as opposed to matter causing mind to exist. All to say, sound, whether we hear it or not, is the vehicle for our physical reality coming into being. That sound is a plane of existence. So basically, we're sound. We're sound. This whole being is sound, just a vibration. When we speak about somebody's vibes, we're hearing their sound. So we can say we're all instruments of the process of consciousness becoming matter. We're all sound instruments. And we're immersed in a world of sound, activity, verbal sound, mental sound, social media devices, a cacophony of vibrations. And quite a bit of it is untuned, discordant, distorted. It's kind of like we're in an unconscious orchestra. I thought that was interesting. So in Zazen, we're like a tuning fork into this silence, bringing our instrument in accord with how things are moving. I've heard people say they're becoming afraid of silence, that they're always taking in something, text, music, radio, television, or thoughts to occupy the space. We want to share, we want to receive, and we can be busy all day long in an effort to connect. It's something we watch closely here. And even in Buddhist time, when it was pretty low tech, no gadgets, no flickering devices, it was easy to be preoccupied, and the Buddha would tell his monks, nuns, and householders, seek a quiet place to do formal practice. Protect noble silence. Be still, then move. This person said, I think we're becoming afraid of silence. What are we so afraid of? I ask myself. Because in that silence, we may feel a deeper sense of our isolation, perhaps, our sorrows, our griefs, our restlessness. And I think a lot of that has always been with us underneath all the thinking. And when we get into silence, as we do in Sesshin, these things become present. And one of the most powerful aspects of Zazen is honesty. We can meet honesty in facing ourselves. There's nowhere to go. We come to see the nature of our mind. But that's also one of the most unsettling things about practice, is to see that. Because we think we can direct and control how we think and feel, and we sit down and meet ourselves so directly in silence. It's very humbling, isn't it? Because we don't know this when we sit down, how uncontrollable, turbulent perhaps, and unpredictable, until we take up Zazen. So maybe it's working. Why were you drawn to a retreat where silence is practiced? Daido used to say, he wrote in The Still Point, "We seem to have lost the ability to just be quiet, to simply be present in the stillness that is the foundation of our lives. Yet if we never get in touch with that stillness, we never fully experience our lives." Daido was a very still person. There's many times he would be standing right beside me and I never knew how he got there. I remember on some wilderness retreats, he used to freak people out because of that. Like, there was one guy that we were supposed to go out on our own solo, and what we didn't know is this person never said they couldn't swim. They came on the trip and they couldn't swim. They had a life jacket, but they didn't want to go on the solo. So they made like they were going to go, but didn't go. And he said he was watching everyone take off and thought, I'm alone. And Daido looked down at him and said, "When are you going?" He didn't even see him. We were on the trail and a bunch of Boy Scouts were walking by really loud, and Daido was sitting there smoking a cigarette. And at one point, while the boys were like in the middle of the line, he said to them, "Good afternoon, boys," and they flew in their pants. Never knew he was standing there. When we went to the Adirondack Museum, he'd been there so many times, he sat on a chair at the end of one of the exhibits, and people were coming over thinking he was part of it. My clay teacher used to have me throw, lots of pots, and mostly she would smash them for a while. And then she'd let me finish a few and trim them and finish them. And she came over and she said, looked at them, "Your pots are so noisy." And I was just like, what is that supposed to mean? "Your pots are so noisy." And I'm looking at him like, what is she seeing here? And she says, "You don't know what you want them to be. Do you want them to have your finger marks? Do you want your lip open? Do you want it out? Do you want it in? Do you want a foot? Do you want the foot inside or outside?" She goes, "They're all over." That was it. But But you can feel when something's quiet. You know, we meet the silence is already present. It's like when we say in Orioki, handle your bowls silently. You know, our bowls are fine. The bowls don't do anything. So what's happening in that moment? Handle your bowls silently. So that's that tuning into silence. And that's a hard place to get to, the depth of that silence in us. To really listen, to ask the questions, and get out of this highway here. This dropping down. It's always there. To recognize our own silence. And rest like royalty there. That's the noble part. You rest like royalty in it. It's noble silence. And this is the opportunity we're given here. Silence is an empty space. And that space is the home of an awakened mind. Merton says, I will try like them to be my own silence. And this is difficult. The whole world is secretly on fire. The whole world burns with this stillness. There is light and a dancing life hidden in the silence. Merton asks, how can we be still or listen to all things burning? How can we dare to sit with them when all their silence is on fire? We can experience silence in a variety of ways. A noble silence in particular ways. So I found this list of some of the silences common to us from the Pali Canon, which a Vipassana teacher put together. Eight kinds of silences. There's the silence of coldness, where a person closes off to another and ignores another person or rejects the person. There's the silence of confusion. A person's mind goes into a spin and cannot say what they wish to say. There's the silence of forgetfulness. A person knows that they need to speak up, write, or act, but forgets. The silence of not knowing. A person does not know how to respond to when another states or asks. There's the silence of numbness. A person makes an error of judgment and finds themselves speechless. Silence of the hidden. A person holds back what they know. Silence out of fear. A person feels afraid to write, speak, or act. Silence out of indifference. A person knows what they need, but cannot be bothered to act. And there's noble silence, which is silence and endurance. A person endures accusations, fault-finding, and negativity. Such a person keeps noble silence. Silence is listening. A person listens mindfully to another with respect and without interrupting. Silence of a few words. A person says little. The person offers precious jewels of insights in the space of a few words. silence of appreciation. A person is deeply touched through one of the senses, or emergence from the death of the inner life. Silence of creativity, a precious movement of artistic endeavor. Silence of zazen or meditation, a depth of inner silence that makes insights and realizations accessible. Silence of receptivity, a calm and clear abiding. A mind abides pregnant for what might emerge inwardly and outwardly. A silence of stillness, a depth of stillness. Sounds, voices, nature, technology pass through the silence and into stillness. Silence of the night, waking up in the night, alert, mindful, experience a palpable silence. Silence of the Sangha, the stillness in our hall. Humans resting in their depth of silence, and the silence of wonder, how we experience this nature, the sky above, the earth below, the surrounding universe. Oh, be still while you are alive, and all things live around you, speaking, I do not hear, to your own being, speaking by the unknown that is in you and in themselves. I'll end with a conversation with Avalokitesvara in the Sarangama Sutra, where Avalokiteshvara is teaching a method called perfect penetration through hearing, which relies not on any words or concepts, but on listening to silence. So in the sutra, Avalokiteshvara was dwelling on an island and listened to the sound of waves washing up against the rocks on the shore. And as they became fully absorbed in listening to the waves, they rose and splashed against the rocks, then receded into silence, rose and splashed against the rocks, and receded, rose and receded, rose and receded. Every sound eventually became silent as it reached their ears. The Bodhisattva described it as follows. I entered into the stream of the self nature of hearing and thereby eliminated the sound of what was heard. When I proceeded from this inner stillness, both sounds and silence ceased to arise. Advancing in this way, both hearing and what was heard melted away and disappeared. When hearing and what is heard are both forgotten, the sense of hearing left no impression in the mind. Without attachment to sound, to silence, listening in this way, we will eventually reach a point where listening still occurs, but it no longer has an object. Awareness is doing its awareness. By that which you are aware of is empty. But that which we are aware of is empty. And the sutra continues, when both awareness and the objects of awareness become empty, then emptiness and awareness merge in a state of absolute perfection. But still, we cannot hold on to that experience. This is the commentator. So to let go of it completely, listening even more, the text directs us, when emptiness and what is being emptied are both extinguished, then birth and death, arising and extinction are naturally extinguished. No mental distinction remaining between emptiness or form. They comment, experiencing complete stillness and silence at the core of everything, we return to our original face before our parents were born. At this point of return, we can really comprehend samsara, birth and death, and be truly liberated from it. The silent fire can be overwhelming, frightening, for it consumes everything, including our ego and our name. So how can we be still in the midst of such a conflagration? Let the heat kill you, we're told. Let the silence kill you. Let it take the you out of you. Really trust yourself. Trust being, even if you don't fully understand what you're doing. Know if you're doing it right. Learn to appreciate the nature of trust and the shining forth of the Bodhi mind that doesn't know wavering and wobbling. Trust that you'll reveal yourself to yourself. Trust your pull to practice, which is a much larger connection, no matter how complicated you may feel. Be still. Listen to the stones of the wall. Be silent. They tried to speak your name. Listen to the living walls. Who are you? Who are you? Whose silence are you? Who? Be quiet. Are you as these stones are quiet? Do not think of what you are, still less of what you may be one day. Rather, be what you are. But who? Be the unthinkable one you do not know.
Thanks so much for listening. To find out more about our ongoing programs and residency opportunities, visit zmm.org.